Welcome to Mentoring Moments. Mentoring Moments is a sub-series of the E-Commerce Edge podcast. It is composed of clips taken from Jason's one-to-one and group mentorship sessions. Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us again for a Mentoring Moments session. I'm here with Steven on one of our two weekly mentorship calls, and he brought up two really good topics that I think will be super valuable to a broader audience. And he's at an e-commerce conference currently in Ireland called E-Commerce Live. I actually spoke at this conference a couple of years ago when it was virtual only during COVID. And so I know that as far as European conferences go, Ecom Live is a pretty serious conference, and it's very popular across Europe. And what we were talking about was how, if you are just a delegate, so let's say you're a vendor of technology, or let's say you're a consultant, or you're an agency, or you're somebody who works in the industry in some way, but you don't either have the resources or you simply don't want to, it's not part of your strategic plan to sponsor one of these conferences, so you just attend as a delegate. How can you actually get value out of the conference outside of content? So outside of the content that you're consuming, which from my perspective, there's hardly any value in content anyway at these conferences, because 9 times out of 10, you're seeing and hearing things that you've either heard before or that you could easily consume via YouTube or LinkedIn or podcast or whatever. It's very rare in my experience. And Steven, I'd be interested to know whether this mirrors your experience. It's very rare when you go to a conference that you hear something truly novel that you've literally never heard before, or something where, you know, it's such a novel take that you go, wow, this was super enlightening. It occasionally happens, but it's pretty rare. And so therefore, what else can you get out of going to these conferences other than the pure content absorption opportunity? And for me, it was always, even if you didn't want to sponsor an event, so let's say you're not a big commerce, you're not a Gorgeous, you're not a major player that wants to go and splash out $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 for a booth, how can you go and still get value out of a conference? And to be honest, for me, I've actually always got more value out of going to these conferences and networking and meeting people maybe face-to-face that I only ever knew online, and having conversations, particularly at lunches, at dinners after the event, the after parties, the drinks parties, the more informal elements of conferences is where I've always got the most value. And I think this has been, you were just mentioning that you guys as a vendor, you didn't sponsor this conference, you don't have a booth there, you're just attending as a delegate, but yet one of your colleagues has already had two really solid conversations with people just as a standard conversation that you would have with any other delegate that look like this might turn into some business for your technology. And so I think that this is a prime example of how, if you're willing to open yourself up, having these conversations with people, and you really have to make an effort to network when you're at these conferences, and you have to find opportunities to network. So there's a few other things I want to mention, but I guess let's talk a little bit about what this experience has been like for you. And I think it maybe was a bit of an eye-opener for you that even just as a delegate, this can have massive value.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely been that. I think to your point about ever seeing anything genuinely novel at an event, yeah, it's tough. Like, the person shall remain nameless, but a good friend of mine was talking at this conference, and he joked, yeah, no, don't worry, you've seen this before anyway, because his speech is the same slide deck at hundreds of events around the world. And like, he delivers it excellently and makes it interactive, and it's slightly different every time, but yeah, the gist of it is exactly the same. I think the only times I've seen anything really insightful and novel has been when it's been a merchant speaking, actually, when it's been like an e-commerce brand and it's been like a CEO. So for example, I saw the CEO of Grenade talk at IRX, the co-founding team at Lounge Underwear, and Steve Hewitt from Gymshark. They all talked at IRX in Birmingham about 2 years ago. And they were all on the same stage, like one after each other. And that was really cool, like seeing their insights into the growth journeys of Grenade and Lounge. But again, as you say, not content that you couldn't have consumed elsewhere. You could have found out their founding story by reading about it, seeing them in one of the many interviews that they've done. So yeah, finding something novel content-wise is pretty difficult. Yeah, we've definitely got some value from this. We've booked two calls with dates and times for basically demonstrations of our platform. I mean, we do customer support automation for large retail brands, and these two are within our range usually. It's at least 10 million in revenue usually, at least 60 headcount. Both of these meet that criteria. so they could end up being real customers for us. And all that we had to pay for was like flights, hotels, that kind of thing. We didn't have to drop a massive sponsorship budget on this. And usually when I've done this in the past, I've only seen value from a partnership perspective. I've only gained from going and speaking to people at booths who have forked out the cash, the Gorgeouses and Big Commerces of the world. Maybe met a few of them that I've never met before because they've suddenly got a booth. That's such a limited, like in terms of revenue generation or whatever, that's such a limited value activity. It's really not even worth the flight and the hotel, to be honest. It's not worth the expenses to just meet a couple of partners that you've met 100 times. But yeah, that was really interesting watching my colleague do that, like how he was able to just introduce himself to all of the main stage speakers, everyone who spoke. He went over, he listened to the talk, paid attention to what they had to say, and then went and talked to them about something that they talked about, introduced himself, and just did some networking with these people, which meant introducing himself to probably 35 people. And then two of them ended up being actually really good prospects for us. But he didn't approach it from like a salesy, demo getting-y angle. He wasn't like, hey, yeah, let's book meetings with all 35 people. He just introduced himself to 35 people and naturally found two people who happened to be looking at AI right now.
I guess that's what I'm referring to as a serendipitous meeting, meaning that if you didn't go, if you didn't turn up, if you didn't buy the tickets as a delegate, if you didn't make the flights, if you didn't make the effort, then you're not going to put yourself in a position where you can even have those 35 conversations with people, even in a non-salesy way. It's actually hard. There's not many audiences around the world. There's not many situations where you can put yourself in a position to meet 35 relevant people in your vertical, in your line of work, in your industry, where you can actually have these low pressure, low key conversations, particularly where people oftentimes are, they've had a couple of beers, they're a little bit more relaxed, oftentimes they're having food. But where I think a lot of vendors and technology providers and agencies and even consultants, where they miss out is the additional opportunities of just having all these people in one place outside of being a delegate. I think there's a lot of brands, especially technology vendors, that, for example, if you go to a conference and you have 20 people at that conference that are customers of yours, why wouldn't you say, okay, let's arrange a customer dinner. Yeah. Let's arrange a nice dinner. Most of these conferences go for at least 2 days, sometimes 3 or 4 days. And so on the night of the first day, oftentimes people are at a loose end. The second day is usually, especially after a conference wraps up, those after conference drinks or after parties are oftentimes sponsored by the big boys, right? They're sponsored by the Big Commerce, the Shopify, the Gorgeous, the after party, right? It's got a headline sponsor. But the first night, oftentimes people are at a loose end. So I find that's a great time to say, hey, let's all meet at X restaurant. It's 5 minutes away from the venue. Let's get everybody there. We've booked out a room. Even if you don't want to pay for the whole thing, or even maybe you only want to subsidize it or maybe put a bar tab on, or it costs you next to nothing in comparison to a booth, which is going to cost you $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 for a booth. Whereas you could for $1,000 or $2,000, you could put a dinner and a drinks on for a small, select, intimate group of people, whether that be prospects, existing customers, whatever it might be. And I don't know many people that will say no to that. I just don't, unless they've already got other plans. Very few times will they say no. So I think there's lots of opportunities to, you've got a whole bunch of people in the same place at the same time that are operating in your space. And I think that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, that first night, it's a really good point. So last night, for example, that is one thing Ecom Live have done very well, is they've made the social element of the conference really quite important. Regular breaks from the main talks for networking, 5 minute breaks with like donuts and coffee and stuff. And then on the first night, they'd arranged a social activity and you had the choice of three things. You could either go for a whiskey distillery tour, the Game of Thrones studio tour in Belfast, or a street art walk-in tour of Belfast. You could pick one of those three things. It was all free as part of your attendance of the event. And yeah, I thought that was really cool. And most conferences don't do things like that. So that leaves an opportunity for tech vendors and agencies and consultants and stuff to do that kind of thing themselves, to take that role, because the attendance was so good for these free social activities. It was so good. And they were awesome. They picked really cool things to do. I love the Game of Thrones studio tour. It blew my mind. But yeah, that definitely is a gap in most of the other conferences that I've been to. I don't know, I've probably been to 20 or 30 in the UK in the last year. And that's a huge gap, is to do that first evening where no one has anything good to do. Tonight, there's a closing party. held by the event. That's normal. But that first night, I thought that was a really nice touch from Ecom Live. And I think that's something I'd like to do from our side and in future conferences, even if we don't sponsor the conference, even if we're not, if we don't have a booth.
Oh, 100%. Couldn't agree more. And one of the other things that we touched on was you were talking about, hey, look, you're probably not going to work for your current company forever. You're probably not going to work for any company forever. People tend to stay 3 to 5 years at a role these days. That's pretty common. And then they'll move on and they'll do something, or the company they're working for gets sold, or it goes public, or whatever it might be. And very few people stay in a role forever. It's not like the old days where people worked at the same company for 30 years and then retired and got the Rolex watch. It just doesn't happen. And so you were talking about the fact that, hey, someday in my career, maybe when I'm a little bit older, I'd love to maybe be on an advisory board seat. Maybe I'd like to be a non-executive director. Maybe I'd like to do some fractional consulting or some fractional work. There's all sorts of opportunities out there in the market other than just being a straight out employee of an employer. There's lots of opportunities in our space to do things that are a little bit off the beaten track, right? And to give you a little bit more freedom, both time freedom, travel freedom, et cetera. And so you were like, where do we start if we want to start moving in that direction now while we still have an employer? How do we move in that direction without upsetting the apple cart and make sure that we're moving in that direction, even if it's 10 years away? How do we start laying the foundation for when we get to that place to where we have those opportunities open to us? And as a consultant myself, I had to go down the same path because, you know, for many years, I had a boss. I had an employer. I was working for an agency boss, or I was working for a brand boss. I was working for as an e-commerce manager, or I was working for other employers. And so definitely I have felt that friction before. But I think what I mentioned was that the one thing that no employer can take away from you is your personal brand. And so you have to build a personal brand with intention over time and effectively build an audience long before you ever need to lean on that audience for anything, right? Mm-hmm. I think the longer that you can go producing content of relevance to your space and your vertical, the longer you can do that without needing to monetize that audience, the better off you'll be. Meaning the longer that you can just put out content that is educational, is entertaining, is first and foremost about you learning about yourself and about the type of content that you like to make and the topics you like to talk about and putting together, because obviously in your day job, you're operationalizing how to do marketing for your vendor, right? For your brand. And you operationalize that with your sales team. You operationalize that through both outbound and inbound activities. You operationalize that in so many ways that then all of a sudden your team works with you to execute on. You need to do the same thing with your own personal brand. You need to say, okay, what are the 2 or 3 or 4 content pillars that I want to be known for and regularly talk about? Let's make that 80% of my content production. Then the other 20% can be more random or more personal in nature. So the 80-20 rule, 80%, I want to be known for these 2 or 3 things. Boom. That's what 80% of my content is consistently be about. So for me personally, I'm known for B2B. I'm known for being a bit of a contrarian. I'm known for, you know, the anti-traditional marketing guy. I don't believe in a whole lot of cold outreach. I think that hurts brands. I'm more technical in nature. I'm not more marketing in nature. And so I speak more to the technical, I guess, and operational aspects of e-commerce than most of my contemporaries do. You know, so I'm known for 2 or 3 really key things that I talk about on a very regular basis. And I started doing that when I was still an employee. And yes, there was the odd occasion where I had to have difficult conversation with the boss and say, look, and they're saying, you're taking an awful lot of time creating content out there. And it's on my own personal channels. It's on my own personal time. I'm not saying or doing anything that would reflect on us as a brand poorly. So what's the problem? Is there a problem here? Is there genuinely a problem here? No, but just to make sure you stay within these boundaries. And sometimes bosses will take your efforts at content creation as a signal that you're about to leave the business. And so I think you have to be really clear. Look, I'm not creating content because I want to leave the business and I want to go do my own thing. I'm creating content because I need to, in this day and age, as of 2023, every single person out there both has the opportunity and I think the obligation to put their knowledge and information back out in the world and send the elevator back down for a start off. And I think it's really important for everybody to have a personal brand that stands alone and independent of their employer. I think that's really critical because that creates credibility around your name in the market, right? Creates credibility because you're demonstrating experience, you're demonstrating expertise, you're demonstrating knowledge by putting content out on a regular basis. Now, if you do that, that can only benefit your employer, right? Because of the context that you make. And so I think this is the kind of discussion that people are going to have to get real comfortable with their bosses, because this is only going to get more important, not less. Would you agree with that, Stephen?
Yeah, 100%. It makes so much sense to me. It's something that I've always, it's easy to slack with. It's easy to slack on that stuff and to not. And it does take a little bit of comfortability with being vulnerable. It does take a little bit of, you are putting your thoughts and ideas and stuff out into a very public forum in a way where they can be very easily criticized, very easily, you can say the wrong thing. But no, I've already seen the value of it from a like a social selling perspective, where I don't have a huge following, like a couple of thousand connections on LinkedIn, something like that. And but they're all within a very specific niche. I work within customer experience and e-commerce. That's pretty much my little golden segment. It's quite a vague term, customer experience, but yeah, that's like my little segment. And I put a picture of a lunch that I had with a partner on LinkedIn. I was telling you this little kind of anecdotally some of the value that I've seen. But a picture of a lunch that I've had with a partner, kind of just showing up as myself. It's the way, it's the attitude I have towards work. And someone liked it, and they happened to be from one of our target customers. And I didn't recognize her, but we were first level connections. And this must be from my past 3 or 4 years of working in like outbound, or 5 or 6 years even, of working in outbound sales roles, sending connection requests to people as part of outbound like outreach and stuff, and not pitching, not sliding into their DMs with some sales pitch, not sending some salesy advert into their LinkedIn inbox. But anyway, so this lady liked my picture of carbonara. And I sent her a message joking about carbonara because I couldn't work out why we knew each other. And that was 2 months ago. And about 2 weeks ago, they closed. There's like a 35, 40K deal for the company that I work for, because this was how we met this lady. And now Amy, her name was, and me and Amy now have a good professional relationship that no matter where we work next, that will stay. That will always be a thing that I actually brought something really valuable to Amy and the company that she worked for. Something that's going to deflect a load of their customer service tickets, make them a load of cash. And she'll remember that I did that valuable thing, actually. It wasn't, even though I gained a lot from it, it was bringing something useful to her. Because I'm not a salesperson. I didn't gain from closing the deal or whatever. I didn't hit any of my quota. So yeah, I've already seen value in that social element. And I think as I get more senior in my career, I suppose that will then have more of an impact on the kind of roles that I look at and the greater value that I can bring to a company. If I had 10x the audience on my LinkedIn, then I'd be generating 10x the value from that kind of thing. Almost ties all the way back to what my colleague has done at this event. He didn't pitch. He didn't walk up to someone who came off the stage and immediately pitch them. He introduced himself to the right people. And eventually that will show results. And LinkedIn is just a way to do that digitally, I guess, just that scale. Introducing yourself to 10,000 of the right people and saying hello in an online way and putting your content up there is just a way of you saying, this is me, this is what I do, this is who I am, this is what I think and feel and believe, and here's an opportunity for you to connect with me if you think and feel and believe the same things.
And I think it also starts to build a flywheel, right? You never know. So like when I really started going hard at content 6, 7, 8 years ago, I could have never envisaged where I'd be at in my life today and how valuable those connections and those friendships, those professional friendships would turn out to be. And I could have never envisaged that, for example, I would get requests to guest on podcasts. I would never have imagined that I would get requests to maybe MC an event or sit on a round table or a panel or go out to these quiet dinners with groups of people that work in our industry, you know, that are invite only. I would never have imagined where my content journey would lead me. I just had to have faith. In the beginning, when I was the hard slog of continually putting out content every single day, I just had to have faith that would lead to good outcomes. I had to have faith in the process that was going to lead to something better in my life and closer friendships and opportunities to build and forge a network that could take me all the way to Mexico, for example. And I would already have people when I didn't know 6, 7, 8 years ago that I'd be moving to Mexico. I had no idea. And I could have never known that COVID was going to hit. I could have never known. There's so many things I couldn't foresee when I first started being really consistent with content. So I just had to trust the process. And I had to trust that good things would drop out of that, even if that wasn't directly padding my wallet. But I had to trust that something good was going to come out of that for me personally and professionally. And it's more than exceeded my expectations. It was pretty quiet there in the beginning when your audience is small. It's pretty quiet. But that's also a great opportunity for you to hone your craft. It's a great opportunity for you to hone your storytelling capabilities. It's a great way to hone your ability to entertain and engage an audience and to have your ideas critiqued and feedback given and to create that feedback loop that's so critical for all of us so that we don't just live in an echo chamber. There was a lot of benefits that came out of those early days when I had a really tiny audience. And that just fed on itself and started to, when you start getting the odd comment, when you start getting the odd, and that just reinforces, hey, this is actually making an impact. And that just encourages you to keep going. So that would be my one piece of advice. Just going, even if you don't know what the end goal is of your content, just trust the process that good things will come out of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought, because I guess it just means it's actually really low risk for me. Having a very small audience means that I get to fuck up. I get to make mistakes. I get to put out things that aren't very engaging sometimes, but I start to learn more about it and practice and hone that craft with such a small audience, very low downside. So yeah, that's a really, really good point. Okay, yeah, you've given me the kick up the ass that I needed, though. I'll make an effort again when we get off this call.
Love it. Love it. All right, mate. Look, I can't wait to chat to you again in another couple of weeks. We'll speak soon. If you'd like to get mentored by Jason for free, head over to greenwoodconsulting.net, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click Get Mentored by Jason.